repeat the verse again with comprehension. Dwe jan nuni sutta lam vishvamurtir uru uru aru ura 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 dvayam vitalam cha talam cha mahitalam taj jaganam mahi pate nabastalam nabi sarogrananti. Okay. And there's a football player with his foot and legs. Yeah. And translation, the knees of the universal form, the knees of the universal form are the planetary system of the name Sutala. And the two thighs are the Vitala and Atala planetary system. The hips are the Mahitala, and outer space is the depression of his navel. In 128, we're also doing Uru Ura Ura Stalam Jyotir Anikam Asya. Oh, change the accent here. Uru Stalam Jyotir Anikam Asya Griva Maharvadanam Vajjanosi. Tapo Varatim Vidur Adipumsa Satyam Tu Shirshani Sahasra Shirshna. Uru stalam jyotirani kamasya griva maharvadanam vajjanosya tapovaratim viduradipumsam satyam tushishir sahasrasirna. Translation. The chest of the original personality of the gigantic form is the luminary planetary systems. His neck is the mahar planets. His mouth is the Janas planets, and his forehead is the Tapas planetary system. The topmost planetary system, known as Satyaloka, is the head of He. It has 1,000 heads. And give me one second here, I'll walk over and, close the curtain because we're getting a reflected light. Okay, wow, it's better. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Okay, going right ahead here. So translation. So before this, it's actually a series of three verses, 26, and we did 27 and 28, but before this is talking about persons who have realized it. Persons who have realized it have studied that the planets, known as Patala, constitute the bottoms of the feet of the universal lords. Okay. And the heels and the toes are the Rasatala planets, heels and toes. The ankles are the Mahatala planets, and his shanks constitute the Talatala planets. So 26, 27, 28. So then we made a little list here of the order as we find the Bhagavatam, and here's Abraham Lincoln with his feet, shanks, thighs, whatever. A respectful person, I guess. Patala are the soles, if you can see our graphic here. Rasatala, we go to the heels and toes. Mahatala are the ankles, talatala, shanks, sutala, knees, vitala, atala, thighs, Mahitala, hips. Navastalam, outer space, is the navel. So we go from hip to navels. Sura Chandraloka, Sura. Sura and Chandraloka are the chest. Sura and Chandraloka. Surya. Maharloka is the neck. Janaloka is the mouth. Tapasyaloka is the forehead. And Satyaloka is the head. Okay. So pretty much you got the whole form. Patala, Rasatala, Mahatala, Talatala, Sutala, Vitala, Atala, Mahatala, Abhastala, Suri, Hachandra, Loka, Mahar, Lok, Jan, Lok, Tapalok, Satyaloka. So sometimes we hear about the 14 worlds. Choda, Bhuva, and Amaje. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says there's nothing to be had in the 14 worlds but the holy name. And so as far as our comprehension, this goes like coming downwards. Number one is Brahma Loka, and then 2, 3, 4 are Jana Loka, Tapa Loka, and Mahar Loka. Okay. Then number 5 is Swarga Loka, and then Bhuva, Bhur, and then the 7 Talas, which we just discussed. Patala, Rasatala, Mahatala, Talatala, Sutala, Vitala, Atala, and Mahitala. So there are 7 worlds below us. We're in Bhurmandal, Bhuva. And the Gayatri Mantra, of course, has those 3 worlds. This is the 14 worlds. But sometimes the 3 worlds are described as Bhur, Bhuva, Swa. And the Surya Gayatri, which is universally known, mentions those 3, Bhur, Bhuva, and Swa. So Bhur, Bhuva, Swa is, Mahanini Swami describes it as our earth, the earth where we walk around and do our business. And Bhuva is the sky. You know? And that's where the fairies, the Gandharva Loka, Kinnaras, Apsaras, they're on that level of consciousness and existence. Then Swarga is heaven, whereas Indra, Chandra, Varuna, all these people. Yeah. So these 3 are pretty much, you know, we're involved with these. Bhur, Bhuva, Swa. And below us are 7 talas, you know, palatala, sutala. Yeah. Then, of course, this will be discussed more. It's discussed again and again, but it'll be discussed more in the 5th canto. I think the most detailed, of course. And there, I think, between 7 and 8, that's where is Bilba Swarga. Swarga, of course, is, you know, heavenly enjoyment. But Bilba Swarga are the subterranean heavenly planets. Subterranean heavenly planets. And those are kind of like, you know, I guess what, like, you know, what's it called? Jamaica or Monte Carlo or Las Vegas. You know, Lake Tahoe on the Nevada side. And if you go to like Las Vegas, it's a subterranean heavenly planet. In Bilba Swarga, there's more enjoyment, more sensuous gratification than there is in Swarga, in heaven. Yeah. So if you go to places like Las Vegas, and these, they have gigantic, you know, pyramids and copies of this and that, and it just comes up right out of the desert. If you're passing through there on an airplane, you're just flying over the desert, then all of a sudden, the distance, this whole, you know, thing rises up out of nowhere. And of course, you can stay in those places for, you know, for 24 hours a day. There's no light. They're gigantic. You can go from this show, to this gaming area, to that gaming area, to this swimming pool, to this massage area, to meet your friends. And so, for business programs. So, and never see the sunlight. This is Bilba Swarga. Yeah. And all four illicit principles are legal there. You know. So this is between, it's under, lower than the earth, but above the 7 talas. Yeah. Now, hell, let's see, Suchimukha, what do we got? Kumbhipaka, and I can't right now put them right into my cosmology, but they're somewhere down there. And as you go down, life gets faster and shorter. So we have like the lives of different, what do you call these guys, termites, you know, and ants, and they engage in huge wars, you know, fighting each other over tasty rotten wood like that. The termites don't eat the wood, they eat the fungus growing in the wood when it's wet. And the wood, I guess, is kind of get out of the way. But of course, this is all being carried on in darkness. And it's like these predictions of the future earth were giant hellish war machines and people with, you know, body robots. And these different species of insects, they attack each other. And some have giant choppers, you know. They can just chop their opponents' legs off, and then they can shoot an anticoagulant on them so they'll bleed to death. So they're attacking, chopping, and spitting. But the other guys can shoot acid into the eyes of the choppers. So it's just like everything you dreamed of, you know. And of course, it's all being carried on in the dark. And you know, and the lifespan is short. Maybe what? Maybe like a few months, you know, everything. So it's described that Yamaraj has unlimited number of planets under his jurisdiction. So Yamaraj is just like Santa Claus. He's checking to see who's been naughty and who's been nice. And when you die, he has a whole selection of reformatory experiences to get you back in shape. You know, stretch you this way, stretch you that way. You know, and after you go through Yamaraj's auto repair shop, you come out looking new, and you're ready to go off and enjoy again. You know? So somewhere those fit in there, and maybe some of us later on can inform us. But then Bor, where we live, Bhuva, where the fairies live, Swarga, where Indra lives, then Mahar, Tapa, and Jhana, and I think that's the order. Yeah. And these are kind of grouped together because Swarga is, I guess, like still kind of like mental gratification, just enjoying yourself, unlimited mental pleasures. But when you come to Mahar Loka, Jhana Loka, Tapa Loka, that's where it becomes just like very, very full of ethics, morality, you know, moral laws, and I guess ethical considerations. And you really get in these subtleties of what is heroism, what is truth, what is right, what is wrong, you know, and this very intellectual place. And there's no suffering there. Excuse me, except for compassion. They feel compassion for those in the lower planetary systems. Of course, this is very great detail described in when Gopal Kumar goes to heaven, the Sanatana Goswami's Brihat Bhagavatamrita, published by the BBT. Yeah. So we can see all these things, and there in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, it gives, there's Lagu Bhagavatamrita, it gives nice practical discussions in terms of like our current age, because all these presentations by Sukadeva Goswami are 5,000 years ago. And the whole atmosphere was different. It's just like, you know, the fall. And we saw it here in Tennessee, all the leaves. The trees had leaves, or two leaves in front of our office. They're all green, and then they changed color, and one changed one way, another changed the other way, and it was very beautiful. And then a big windstorm came after some time, and within two or three days, it blew off all the leaves, and all the ground was covered with leaves, you know. So very quick, we went from summer to fall to winter. Now, those same trees, you wouldn't kind of like recognize them, because now they're just sticks, you know. Like that, yeah. And so this is what happens when we go from Dwapara Yuga to Kali Yuga. So many things actually change their form, change their vitality, and they're just different, you know, different, you know, so on. So the summer, the winter version of an apple tree is very different than the, you know, the spring, summer, or fall version of an apple tree, you know. So Maharloka, Jhanaloka, Tapaloka, very subtle. And description in the fifth canto, and I think in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, more detailed description. And of course, that's being given, again, by somebody who's talking about it just within the last 500 years. So in some ways, much more accessible to our comprehension. So again, Sukadeva Goswami and all the things we're seeing in the Bhagavatam are being described 5,000 years ago, and of course some of them took place, you know, millions of years ago. And so for even in that terms, it's just the Bhagavatam to Brahma is just four verses, you know. And so, you know, Sukadeva Goswami was you know, adjusting things for Maharaj Pariksit. Otherwise, he would have met Maharaj Pariksit and the whole Bhagavatam would have been finished in 4 verses. You know. Yeah. Then finally, Brahma Loka, where Lord Brahma lives, and those yogis who are Hiranyagarbha yogis, which is, I guess, one step above the Virat Roop and one step below the Paramatma. Yeah. And they realize that. Yeah. They go to Brahma Loka also. And there Lord Brahma can see Garbhadakshai Vishnu the same way we can see the deities on the altar, like during Mangalarti, during Shringarti. He directly sees Garbhadakshai Vishnu from a very respectful position, like that. The pleasures on Brahma Loka are indescribable in mundane words. Yeah. I think I calculated this one time. It'd be good to go through someone to do this, you know. But if we go ahead and look at the time relationships, as I remember, it's like to the fairies, the Apsaras, the Gandharvas, the Kinnaras, Charanas, we look like rats. You know, and in one lifetime, you may have make some friendship with some chipmunk, and every day or something, you know, as a child and getting food, and the chipmunk comes, and the chipmunk's children also learn to come. So you may go through, like, you know, one lifetime associating with this family of chipmunks, and may even teach them how to do things and protect them from a fox and, you know, or some diseases. So that may be something like, I guess, what, maybe like a chipmunk's lived like 6 years or something, you know. So if you live to be 66 years or 70 years, maybe you'll go through 10 generations, you know, the sons, the grandsons, the great-grandsons, the great-great-grandsons, the great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandsons. So the different places in the world, we see different, like, places where people can get special medical results, you know, or different waterfall places, and some people have contact with the Gandharvas or things that live there, and they can transfer power. So that's kind of the relationship. We're like kind of like chipmunks. We have our burrows. We have our civilization, our association, you know, our language even. You know? But that's how we look to the Gandharvas, yeah, the duration of our lifespan, the level of our intelligence. Boy. And if we go to Swarga, Indraloka, then we look like cockroaches. You know? Again, maybe we live like, you know, 2 months, you know, rather than 7 years. Yeah. And we have cockroaches. They have their societies, their civilizations, their habits. You know. Yeah. And finally, to Brahma Loka, Lord Brahma, we look like atoms and molecules. You know, atoms and molecules, you know, coming together, you know, and coming and going like that. So it's all some kind. So this is what we're capable of. The soul, the Atma, is capable of residing on any of these different 14 or 3 different worlds. I've seen different descriptions too of what's going on here and there. I've heard Prabhupada said that Jesus Christ probably came from, like, you know, Maharloka, Tapaloka, Janaloka. And even there are things in the Bible that kind of indicate that. Okay. Now here's a... something else too, because we're talking about, word by word, we're talking about loka, Brahma loka, Indra loka, and this word is also a very similar word in Latin, which is locus, and they say like 15 to 35, 25, 15 to 25 to 15, 35, something. Old Latin is stlocus, a place, you know? And in mathematics, for example, you use this word loka, you know? A parabola is the locus of points equidistant from a single line and a point. You know? So you take some line here. There we go. Okay. And you'll see that the distance from this line, you know, to this point is the same. You know? And so that makes the whole set of points. It's all these points that have the same distance from the line. anywhere on the line. Of course, as you go up the line, now you can have three. You know, well, one, two, three and a half. Okay, at least if that's down to here is three. But that's, I guess over here we have the idea here, right? Okay, you know, something like that. Okay, maybe the point's minus one. You got me. You know, plus one. But anyway, that's the basic idea. Is just you draw a line, and then all the points that will have the same distance from that line and from a given point. What are they? It's not just one point. It's a whole locus of points. A circle is the locus of all points equidistant from one point. An ellipse is like a stretched circle, so it has two centers. And then an ellipse is the locus of all points. The sum of the distance from two points is a constant. Okay. Stick two push pins into a piece of wood. Tie a piece of yarn loosely from them, the exact length you want. Stretch it out with a pencil or a crayon. And now then just move it around, and all the points you can draw with that stretched string from those two points, you'll get an ellipse. You know, carpenters know this. So all you got to do is pick the distance between the two centers and the length of your string, and that will determine the shape of your ellipse. Okay. So I'm going into all this to try to communicate this Sanskrit word loka, because Prabhupada translates it as planet, you know. And I think the word planet means something, you know, different to him. The word planet to us means a dirt ball moving around in outer space, you know, where NASA is trying to land. Okay. Like Brihaspati Lok. That's Jupiter. Yeah. So we say, okay, Jupiter's a very big dirt ball and it has smaller dirt balls going around it. Yeah. But that's how we experience it from Bhumandal, you know, from our earth level of perception, consciousness, awareness. It's just like, again, if somebody who's deaf goes into a room and there's a lecture going on, there'll be, you know, a person that may be nothing happening, you know, nothing happening, you know, it's because they can't perceive on that level. You know? So, and simultaneously around us right now, probably all of us, we're surrounded by cell phone conversations, you know, and cell phones, it's, you know, so many, you know, electromagnetic conversations, television channels, so many things are going on around us. But we're not in that level of consciousness. So Mahaloka, Palaloka, these are all different realms, different domains. And how we say higher or lower, again, it doesn't mean in terms of generally our Euclidean space that we use to organize Bhumandal. There are many different kinds of spaces. Actually, you can make a space based upon parabolas. And we use rectilinear, XY, which is Euclidean space. Japanese people are born and they grow up in circular space, polar space. But you can actually make a space which is designed like this. And then the shortest distance from here to here is going to be along the parabola, like that. Which in certain cases is actually shorter or more accommodating than Euclidean space. So even mathematicians in the West, you know, these gyanis, they begin to appreciate that space is something created. And so when we're talking about lower planetary system, higher planetary systems, when I was a little child, I mentioned this before, my brother was digging to plant some seeds, you know. And I was sitting there looking, and he was digging kind of deep, and I was afraid the devil was going to come out. I was like watching with a fair amount of apprehension, you know, because that's where the devil is. You know, the devil is down below, you know. But it's a lower level of consciousness. It's a lower level of mental activity or something. What are the dimensions? Of course, dimensia means two measurements. Right away, we're talking about Euclidean space and dimension. Here's one, my dimension, minus 2 plus 2. Other dimension is y, is minus 1 plus 4. Okay, x, y. So you start to get into this. At least the idea is to understand that it's not some crazy, you know, Hindu idea that, well, I went down to the South Pole and I looked and I didn't see Anantasesha. You know, you're supposed to be under the earth. You know, I'm a heart surgeon. I've cut open the heart many times. I never saw the soul. Yeah. No, it's talking about different way of measuring, you know, what is higher and what is lower, and on different levels and different kinds of perception like that. So I think this is hopefully enough. Yeah, move on here. Okay, actually come to purport. Prabhupada says, the effulgent luminary planets, like sun and moon, are situated almost in the mid-place of the universe. Yeah. So I would say mid-place is stomach, but Prabhupada's taking it as the chest. Again, it's interesting. I'm a little more low down in my consciousness. Almost in the mid-place of the universe, and as such, they are to be known as the chest of the original gigantic form. So I think we take the body as standing up, but these guys take the body as sitting down. If you sit down and put your legs into a lotus posture, then the middle, you know, is the chest. The stomach's almost on the bottom like that. Yeah. Yeah. So we're so passionate, we've got to be on our feet. Okay. And above the luminary planets, called also the heavenly places of the universal directorate demigods, are Mahar, Janas, and Tapas Lokas. We got Janas Priha Das here. So, what does that mean? I guess that means that Priha or Priya? Janas Priya would be dear to the Jana people. Yeah, actually, dear to the people. Yeah. But anyway, Janas Loka, Mahar Loka, Janas Loka, Tapas Loka. And above all, the Satya Loka planetary system, where the chief directors of the modes of material nature reside, Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva. Of course, there are more and more details about this in the fifth canto and so on. And let's go on here. Okay. This Vishnu, which is the one perceivable on Brahmaloka, is the Kshiradakshai Vishnu. And he acts as a super soul in every living being. Yeah. So sometimes Prabhupada also calls him impersonal Vishnu. Yeah? Because people, they realize the triune, the Trimurti, the triune deities, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva. Atrimuni was on this level. He couldn't really distinguish who was the supreme. So this, at this point, Vishnu is kind of like impersonal. Again, it's like you can see President Barack Obama at some convention, this and that. You're there with maybe like 2,000 more people. So he's there as a person. You can see he's moving. You can see this and that. But it's still quite impersonal. There's no like a personal relationship. Okay, so this is Vishnu and the Super Soul, Shiradakshai. There are innumerable universes floating on the causal ocean. And in each of them, the representation of the Virat form of the Lord is there, along with innumerable suns, moons, heavenly demigods, Brahmas, Vishnus, and Shivas. So again, this, I guess, when it's time for creation, how does it, the causal ocean is not manifest all the time. When the material energy is eternal, it always exists. But when it's in a non-manifested form, then it's like it's called pradan. Just like I have my fist closed up tight. Okay, now you can't see the different fingers. If I manifest it, I can turn it into a cup for holding water. I can turn it into a pointer for pointing directions out. You know, I can hold a pen with it. You know? So I can make different communicative sign language symbols with it. Some of which are known to everybody, or some of which are known to people who speak sign language. Yeah, and so that's all there, but it's not manifest. So that's the pradhan, and it's always there with Mahavishnu. But then. Somehow or other, it says, by chance, okay, Mahavishnu then breathes out. And of course, every time we breathe out, there's so many little you know, drops of perspiration, tiny drops of perspiration are there. You know? If you breathe on a cold mirror, you can see them. And out of the pores of our body also, there's also always perspiration going on. So how small are those drops? They're infinitesimal. You can't see them even. But each of those is a universe. And somehow or other they float on the causal ocean, which is also called the river Viraj. And we got one more here. Causal ocean, river Viraj. Okay, probably somebody else. Probably Doug will know this later on. He'll tell us. Causal ocean, river Viraj. Come on, what's the third one? I can't remember what it is. It has three different names. You know? But that's kind of the boundary. Maybe that's where cause and effect starts. And before that, there's only love. But now we got, you know, doing things for a purpose, you know, some result. Yeah. So they're all floating there. And then Mahavishnu expands himself as Garbhadakshay Vishnu and enters into each one. You know, it's like, you know, kind of like a reflection of Mahavishnu in all these little mirrors. And then so he's also a Paramatma. He's kind of like the Paramatma of the universe, like the soul is the Paramatma of our body. We are the Paramatma of this body. The pilot is the Paramatma of the 747. But then he expands himself as Kshiradakshaya Vishnu. And this is like all the stewardesses and the steward eyes and, you know, going up and down and doing all the individual relationship with each individual, you know, jiva. So all the hands are his hands. All the heads are his heads. You know, all the legs are his legs. Sahasra Sirsa, Sahasraksha, Sahasrapat. That's the Purusa Sukta. And it's saying he has thousands of hands, thousands of heads, thousands of eyes, like that. Yeah? Yeah. So this is Vishnu. He's the puppeteer inside the glove. The glove with all the little finger puppets on it is not going to do anything without the puppeteer inside. So this Vishnu is everywhere like that. And the Virat Roop is one of the manifestations. Okay, boy, how's it go? Looking at it as far as we understand, the Kshiradakshaya Vishnu, on him is the Hiranyagarbha form, the golden egg, and on that is the Virat Roop, which is described as the legs, the Mahatala are his legs, the so-and-so are his so-and-so, like that. Yeah. Okay, let's go on. All of them are situated in one part of the inconceivable potency of Krishna, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, 10:42. But what need is there, Arjuna, for all this detailed knowledge? With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support this entire universe. So Krishna says, I am the lion, I am the mountain, I am this, I am that. And they're very good. They make us wake up. You know, I'm God. Yeah, are you the lion? Well, I'm not the lion. Okay, you're not God. Okay. But at the end of this pantheism, Arjuna says that he's the Paramatma. He goes to mysticism. This is Bhagavad Gita 10. And then the next chapter, Arjuna says, O greatest of all personalities, O supreme form, though I see you here before me in your actual position, as you have described yourself, I wish to see how you have entered into this cosmic manifestation. I want to see that form of yours. So Krishna in 10:42 says, I'm pervading, I'm the Paramatma. In 11:3, Arjuna says, hey, let me see that. Yeah. And there's this universal form, which is the Virat Roop, the Paramatma, you know, that kind of stuff. Okay. Then I guess this is... What is this? This is Srimad Bhagavatam 4:23. Oh, yeah. So in our Bhakti Bhai Baba program, which we're trying to pioneer here and, you know, do the, we're up to the fourth canto now. So I guess after next year, we'll all be Bhakti Bhai Bhavans. And trying to see that we actually have some knowledge. You know, it's a real struggle establishing a whole university of Bhagavad culture. So there, in Maharaj... what is that's going to be? That's Maharaj Prithu goes back to Godhead. It's describing the same thing. And Kumara is giving these instructions, and he applies them. So we see them very nicely. You know, And you can see all the parallels. You can see the different angles, how this thing's supposed to work from different angles. So it says in 4:23:16, in terms of Maharaj, what Maharaj Prithu is leaving his body, the words yatastanam vibhagashaha, Prabhupada says in the purport, indicate that one should know the process of creation and should meditate upon the creative process inversely and thus become free from material contamination. So all these discussions we're going through, they're 5,000 years old. Prabhupada's taking the time to write purports to the Kali Yuga. But we have to actually appreciate this. You know? Somebody who's cooking, they're in their kitchen, and they're cooking and they're making bread. They're beginning to realize, okay, add the water, it does this and that. And somebody else does it through Ayurveda. Somebody else does it through, you know, through Gandharva Veda. Mostly Ayurveda is Gandharva Veda, singing, chanting, dancing. And we begin to realize how the prana is flowing. We're trying to play the drums. We're trying to do this, trying to get the proper tone. We're realizing how I have to feel the tone of my body to get the proper tone and to express the feeling. You know? So bhakti yoga means we've got the goal in sight, but we're going through all these different things. Karma mishra, bhakti yoga. Jnana mishra, bhakti yoga. You know? Dhyana Mishra, Bhakti Yoga, you know, and then Bhakti Yoga, Vaidhi Bhakti, Raganuga Bhakti, Baba Bhakti, there were so many levels. You know? So if we don't know our level, how are we going to take the proper medicine? You know? How are we going to advance to the next stage like that? You know? And so we get different things too. We get all expense paid, free vacations to Goloka every 5 years, I mean like that. And we get all expense-free paid vacation to Swarga every week, you know, chant Hare Krishna, and we get to honor prasadam properly, and we really get in the celestial level of consciousness, and we're really enjoying prasadam, enjoying getting up, enjoying, yeah. So Swarga, ISKCON Swarga. Yeah. So we have to appreciate these different levels, and by the mercy of Krishna, sometimes we get these very higher things. And the real process, Prabhupada says, we have to do it. We have to fold the water back into the earth back into the fire. Fire back into the air back into the sound back into the mind back into the intelligence back into the false ego back into the Mahatattva, and the Mahatattva back, that's it, back into Mahavishnu. We're out, out of the clown suit. Yeah. Pretty slick graphic, huh? Monkey and Piggy do my PowerPoint shows. You can hire them. Okay. Going on here. So one last thing I got here. This is kind of interesting. If you look on the old Wikipedia, the tottering knowledge of universal, tottering platform of universal knowledge. I pay $50 a year for the Britannica, and it's actually worth it, you know. I think, as you understand, they asked the director of the Britannica what he thought about the Wikipedia. And he said, I use it, you know. He said, the Wikipedia is like the chisel, and the Britannica is like a drill. Wikipedia can give you general knowledge about things, and not always so reliable. And the Britannica is much more reliable and focused. You know? One time I looked up, what's it called, carbon dating on the Wikipedia, and got some pretty good perspective. Then I went to the Britannica. It was, yeah, more careful, more guided. And they had some links, which they accepted, which gave me a pretty solid platform to argue about, you know, carbon dating and how you can't use it to deny the existence of the previous yugas. Many, they admit very serious flaws with carbon dating. Yeah. So another one is the Gaia hypothesis. Gaia means earth in Greek philosophy. So it says the Gaia hypothesis proposes that organisms interact with their inorganic surroundings on Earth to form a self-regulating complex system that contributes to maintaining the conditions for life on the planet. And so there are two people that were really responsible for this, one lady and one man. And it really is very interesting because basically they don't want to lose their scientific credibility, but you know, everybody takes it and they don't really deny it, I don't think, that much. That actually you're looking at it this way, you can look at the earth as in just as much a living entity as we are. You know? All the characteristics that science will attribute to a, the human body are there in the earth. And just like we have different bacteria and stuff in our stomachs, each blood cell is a different, you know, little living entity. So we're running around on the earth. And if we're acting properly, we see this very nice, what's the word, like a harmony between the earth and the human beings and the frogs and some big bacteria that spread for miles in the earth, like that. So the gay hypothesis becomes a very, you know, nice way and sometimes to relate to a lot of people to explain the this broad conception. Okay, so thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. And our webpage address is there with our newsletter. So any comments, questions, complaints?
Maharaj, I tell you, that was a fantastic class. Even though I wasn't listening too closely, I'm happy we recorded this. That was really, really outstanding. I'm still working on that. Okay, now I've done it. So, if anyone has any questions or comments.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my
obeisances. Who is this? Oh, impersonal voice, who are you?
Yuga Larasa.
Can you talk a little louder?
Yes. Can you hear me better now?
It's better, yeah.
Okay, so I have two questions. One is that sometimes we hear two opinions in ISKCON about how devotees, how we can go back to spiritual world. And one opinion is that the only way is from the Earth planet. Can even given comparison with like a skyscraper that doors are on the bottom and that door is Earth planet, that there is no another way to get into spiritual world. And another opinion that we still may go to higher planetary systems where sages are living and then progress from there. So what's your opinion on that?
No, for example, Prabhupada says, we're just reading that even those people in the Brahma Jyoti, what to speak of the earth, out of them, here in the Brahma Jyoti, there are people sitting there meditating, whatever. Sometimes when they hear the Sankirtan parties going from, you know, Vaikuntha, Goloka, down to preach in the material world, they become attracted by the kirtan, and they progress then, like that, you know, and they go back to Godhead. But Prabhupada said it's not so normal, you know, like that. And then it's described, you know, that when Lord Brahma, Lord Kapila says, at the end of the universe, then when Brahma goes back to Godhead, and everybody else goes with him. You know? There's different possibilities, you know, of going back. Because so many places it's describing people going back in different places like that. You know? You go to Shiva, and then from Shiva Loka you can go up also. You know? But the most, the earth is a very nice place. It's Punya Bhumi. A very, very nice place to acquire all these different, pious qualities and pious activities. And hell is too distracting because there are too many problems, you know. And heaven is too distracting because there are too many pleasures, you know. So it's very difficult to do the work, you know. But you know, if you go to Swarga, for example, like we're talking about Las Vegas, yeah, illicit sex, intoxication, gambling and meat eating are all legal. You know, the government actually regulates them there. You know? But there are people there who are not engaged in that. You know, there's even an ISKCON temple there. So yeah, it's possible to go back to Godhead in Las Vegas. You know? If you're looking for the right thing, if you have the right motivation, the right, what's the word, Spanish word, transfondo, the right background of spiritual pious activities. So that's my understanding of so many citations. And yeah, you can do it, but yeah, the most practical place is is Bumando, where we are.
I see. Thank you so much. I just didn't know our Prabhupada's references. Okay, so another question was, if I can quickly ask, and then that sometimes, of course, we're hearing that it says that in Kali Yuga that we're responsible for our actions and not for our thoughts. On another hand, for devotees, you mentioned about consciousness and the sound. It's everything is made from sound, as we know, and then we have to change ourselves by sound, by chanting Maha Mantra. So I forgot the Sanskrit names for those. There's three types of sound. One I remember is Vaikavi. I'm sorry, I forgot the Sanskrit names. But in other words, that our thoughts also a type of sound. And a desire is a type of sound. It's a subtle levels of sound. Pashyantivak, and then another two I forgot. So it looks like we should be responsible for our thoughts.
Yeah, oh boy. Because, for example, when you Gopal Kumar, like, you know, do you have the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, the DBT books?
Yes.
Yeah, they're nice, you know, they go through them. So, right, he leaves the material world, right? But then he has to go through these seven coverings, you know, starting with earth and then like that. Each one's seven times thicker, like that, you know? And then he sees a different deity. For example, going through the earth, the predominating deity is Varaha, and the principal worshiper is Bhumi, like that, Mother Earth. And they invite him to stay there. And he thinks it's so nice. You can worship Krishna, this and that. But it's a subtle attachment, you know? So it's kind of like my understanding, you know, is that, describing all this, is that you can think about sounds and you can vibrate those sounds through your gross apparatus. You know? And there are different studies in this in psychology that, I think Sadaputa was getting into this, that if you say something forward, it may be including something else backwards. And there are actually even studies of this, you know. And so if you have some thought bouncing around in your mind, sometimes the thoughts are just conceptions. It's just an understanding. You see something, and suddenly you understand what's happening. Oh, okay, yeah. And but then after that, it may go and form into like a linear series of ideas. You know? And then after that, then you may want to form it into a dance motion, or you may want to form it into a visual sequence, or you may want to form it into an acoustical sequence. Even if you're talking about visual, somebody's smashing your microphone. Don't smash your microphone. It makes noise. Yeah. So dancers, for example, they can memorize like two, three minutes of a dance. MA, PhD students, we used to teach them in the universities, our Manipuri stuff, and they were just amazing because they were oriented towards touch. And somebody else is oriented towards sound, somebody else is oriented towards visual. You know? And you can see that different ones are more gross. You know? So, for example, the essence of dance is music. And so people that are dancers, they'll use the music and stuff to hang the tactile motions and stuff on, like that. You know, so at that level, it can still be in the mind. In the mind, you can be dancing at a very subtle level, or you can make it into the point where if it comes in contact with the senses, it just manifests itself. Thinking, feeling, willing. You know, so yeah, but at what point, as far as I know, there's no karma until the indriya are activated. You know, you can be just looking at the cake, and even though you know it has eggs, you're looking at it and meditating on it and thinking the eggs are making it fluffy, and you're subtly tasting it, and your tongue is watering, and, you know, saliva is coming in your mouth. Okay, you still don't get it. But the second you reach for it, you know, okay, karma. Yeah. But But that's why we got to be careful, because if we're thinking about this and everything else, hey, it's very easy then to become, have the senses become uncontrollably activated. So if we don't even think about it, you know, then you see it's, you know. Actually, our good friend, what's his name, from Alachua, he's not here today, Madan Mohan, he talked about that, that sometimes you see some maya, and your mind goes, oh, it looks like maya. Let me look a little closer. Yep, it's maya. Oh, let me look even a little more closer. Yeah, it's maya. I better reject it. So, Buddhist phrase, a good horse runs even at the shadow of a whip. So even a little bit of this is maya, you don't even go on and investigate anymore. That's enough for me, just the smell. I haven't got to feel it. I haven't got to stick it in my mouth. No, it's maya. So different levels and different levels of security. So that's what I would understand. It really is when the senses become activated, we get the karma. But before that, you know, we're just thinking about eating, thinking about talking.
I have a thought on that, and that is, that's true. There may not be specifically karma as a result of one's thinking if you don't go to the point of actually acting on it. But it still can vary, it can certainly greatly impede one's spiritual life, even if he doesn't act on it, if he's simply meditating upon it. And there's that important verse in the Gita where Krishna says, Karmindanyani Sanyam, what is it? Karmindanyani Sanyam Yaaste Mana Saksmaram Indriyatam Vimudhatma Mijatsa Uchite. Krishna says that if one is dutifully restraining his senses, but at the same time his mind is dwelling upon those objects, he deludes himself, and michachasa uchate, he's called a pretender. So it's very pleasing to Krishna. Krishna's listening in. It's sort of a three-way conversation, if you will. You know, ourself and our mind, which we're not controlling, and Krishna's privy to that, and it's very displeasing to Krishna.
Disturbing, huh? Horrible. And then you build up that intelligence, and find that intelligence becomes so strong that you can't control it.
Yeah, that's the inevitable. If at some point you don't cut it off, you're going to act on it. But even if you don't act on it, you're not creating karma, but you're greatly impeding your spiritual life.
Yeah, you're not developing your spiritual life. Yeah, exactly. You know. Wow.
Hi, Krishna. This is Balabhadra.
Hi, Krishna.
Just and the comments to what has just been shared, plus a question on another point altogether. I have read, and I believe I read it in the Mahabharata, where it is said that in Satya Yuga, you get no karma for thinking piously, but you get the reactions if you think impiously, because in such a yuga, impious thoughts shouldn't be occurring. And then it says in Kali Yuga, you get the karma for thinking piously, but you do not get the karma for thinking impiously, because impious thoughts are rampant in Kali Yuga.
Kali Yuga ki jai.
What is a Shastric reference? I've never heard that. Where did
I've read it. I have actually read it in Mahabharata. Well, it's in one of the Mahabharatas, and I think it's one that was printed by. I got it right. I'd have to leave the microphone to go get it. But it's been printed by one of the devotees, not.
Advaita. Torchlight.
I got a phone call telling you the same thing.
Okay.
But I have read it, and I'll have to research where I've read that, but I have read it.
Okay.
But Maharaj, in getting back to your class per se, because we're discussing the arrangement of the planetary systems, it's my understanding, and there's evidence of this in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that when the demons go to battle with the demigods, they want to control the kingdom of heaven. They want to be the directors of the universe themselves, but they're never really interested in going beyond Indraloka. You know, they're never interested in going beyond Svargaloka. They're never interested in Brahmaloka and those other higher planets, because there's no sense gratification there. Is that a correct understanding or what?
No, well, we see that Indra took charge of, Hiranyakasipu took charge of Indra's throne, right? So Swarga, yeah, they want to conquer Swarga. But it's like, you know, they just have no interest in the Grand Canyon or Yosemite Park, this kind of stuff. They're interested in Las Vegas and that kind of stuff. So they exist, but they see no reason to conquer them. In a sense, because like you're saying, that their interests are is gratification. So yeah, usually they conquer Swarga, experience in the Bhagavatam, and of course Hiranyakasipu directly took over Indra's throne and was sitting on it. And Bali Maharaj too, also conquered Amaravati. Hare Krishna. There's a great silence. Hare Krishna.
Maharaj, I loved your description about the world, the hellish world of the insects.
Okay.
It really puts in perspective, what kind of a hell that is.
You can find it in National Geographic. Look at National Geographic, you find the whole description.
Yeah, we're trying to imitate the insect world, This world becoming more and more hellish, more lethal, killing machines.
Yeah, yeah. And they already exist. So now the U.S. Army will start studying warrior ants.
We were just reading in Bhagavad Gita, Neha Bhikrama Nashasti Pachavayan, and that the greatest type of fear is to go back into the lower species of life. That was shocking.
Wow. You're being educated at heart there, but it's influencing your gigantic heart, beating on it, but there's no conscious education. And we're just like watching forced to watch horror movies, That kind of stuff, one after another. Wow. Yeah. So I guess it's about all here. We're in Tennessee still, here until December, and we see at one point it was kind of you see again and again and again and again. There's instructions by somebody how to become self-realized. And then many times that person then later on applies that, and becomes self-realized. Like for example, like Vidura preaches to Dhritarashtra, and Dhritarashtra goes and applies it. And a lot of the Bhagavatam is, of course, really this mystic yoga process. A lot of it's there. But it was spoken 5,000 years ago, and many times in the purports, then Prabhupada, for example, says these prayers of Lord Shiva to the Prachetas are very nice. Devotees can recite these. But principally speaking, we should do kirtan like that. We shouldn't try and go underwater and meditate on this very long prayer every day again and again, chanting it. And we should stay above water and chant and dance. And so, therefore, the Bhagavatam is very important. The purports are very important. And Chaitanya Charitamrita is then, like a Bhagavatam class. And so if we can go ahead and start to having our classes and our discussions on Chaitanya Charitamrita, so nice. And then Nectar of Devotion then becomes like an extract of the whole thing, a concentrated discussion of all the books in this one, in 1,700 verses or something like that, And Upadeshamrita, of course, in 11 verses, So finding our place in the Bhaktivedanta library, developing the Bhagavat University of Bhagavat culture, and then trying to get the result, personally of becoming purified, so we can participate in the Sankirtan movement better, and also so we can save our own Mahatala Sutala, and they didn't go into the backside there. What is it? Oh, they had that someplace. The backside of the universal form is this or that or something, So we're trying to get all these things, save all these things, and go back to Godhead. So thank you very much, everybody, for your association. And I guess Maharaj? There's a lot of, okay.
Just one last point here. Totally irrelevant to today's class and discussion.
Jai, Harimo.
But it's relevant to last week's class that you gave.
Okay.
Did you get that email that I sent you a couple of days ago?
I didn't get anything, no.
Actually, it wasn't an email. It was on your website.
Well, that takes a little longer.
I found the reference for that AUM, A Krishna, U Radharani, and M Living Entity. It's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's in Prabhupada's purport, 7th chapter of Adilila, verse 128. There's a very extensive purport, and that's where it's explained.
7128. So 128
Adilila, Adilila 7128.
2 times 64, 64 is 2 times 32, 32 is 2 times 16, 16 is 2 times 8, 8 is 2 times 4, and 4 is 2 times 2. So it's Adilila chapter 7, 2 to the 7th power, which is 128.
Ha ha ha!
Adi 7.
Adi 7, 128. Yeah, it's a very sensitive purport, and he talks a great deal about Omkar throughout the entire purport.
Yeah.
And that's where he says, A is Krishna, U is Radharani, and M is the living entity.
Well, we got it.
Thank you very much.
So we're connected to Krishna through Radharani. Yeah. Thank you all so very much. All Gwai Srila Prabhupada.
Thank you, Maharaj, for a wonderful class.
Haribol. Nice. Haribol.
Okay.
We'll see you all soon.